Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello everyone, welcome back to Rule the Roost podcast, one of a new edition of what we're calling the coffee shop sessions, as we're actually recording this at an uncharacteristically early time, but nobody needs that peek behind the curtain.
If this was 10 years ago, like when we started the podcast, the coffee shop sessions would both mean we both had a spliff on the go.
Yeah, now we're both boring and old. We're both old now, Raj.
Yeah, that's the sad truth of it.
I'm older, admittedly. I'll get that, but
that is how time works. It's not as if I was ever going to catch you up at any point. That gap stays the same.
But you sort of do, in a way. That's the weird. That is the weird thing.
Yeah, it's like the way I always think of this, and I'm not being like weird, or I hope it don't come across weird. Like, there's a 3-year age gap between my mum and dad, but because like one of them's 50 and one of them's 47, they're essentially the same age.
Yeah,
but like, if they were in primary school and one was in year 3 and one was in year 6, then you're like, you'd never go out with a year 3, but like, you know what I'm saying?
Put it this way.
My relative.
I was in sixth form when my wife was in year 7, and she still calls me a paedophile. So, you know.
Yeah, fair play to her.
There you go. Just, you know, it's just, that's love.
I'm 7 months younger than my wife to be.
So I
take the piss and call her old. But really, the only reason there's any difference in our ages is because I'm born in September, so I fall into the year below hers. But I was always the oldest in my year because I'm September 2nd. So really, there's no discernible difference between.
Do the gals call her a cougar? They must have.
No, I don't think they bring it up because it's 7 months. I think it's only something that I hold any water for, really.
Oh, well. Everton.
That game.
Did you see, this is funny, this is interesting. Like,
you didn't think it was the greatest Tottenham Hotspur game of the world just because some fucking goals were scored?
No, nor, though, did I think it was a grand embarrassment. I've seen kind of this take that, oh, typical Spurs on the big stage were an absolute embarrassment, an absolute shambles. I mean, look, do you know what
I mean, there was 10 minutes of the first half that was a shambles and an absolute embarrassment. Let's start pretending it was some great stand.
I mean, my baseline, right? My I told you I had a fiery, hot, spicy take about this one. Do you know what it is? It's basically that, generally speaking, better football teams win matches. And at this point in time, it might be hard for us to admit, Everton are probably just a better team than us. I mean,
if that's your spicy take, yeah, Jack, we can tell you why, because that was that was severely underseasoned.
I mean, but I don't see it as... It was annoying and it was bad to collapse, but they collapsed as well. They Evertoned the fuck out of it. We Spurs the fuck out of it.
Oh, I tweeted the same at the time. Like, this is a proper ding-dong battle between the two biggest banter clubs in the country. Like, pound for pound, I think.
I mean, what did you make of it?
I was annoyed to start at half-time. I think just before it went 3-2 and Lamella scored, I was lining up a tweet. I think I screenshotted you, which was, you know, double-barreled, heads gone, calling them all weasels and spineless cunts and all that sort of shit. And then Lamella scored and I quickly, changed tune slightly because I was like, oh, shit, they might actually win this game. But it was... The thing that got me is I try and think about it objectively, and because it's easy to let emotion take away with you when it's your own team, and I kind of think this is a sort of game that Mourinho was brought in to not allow to happen. Like, one of his main objectives as Tottenham manager wasn't just to win something, it was to make us, you know, significantly less Tottenham. And this was a maximum Tottenham game in almost every conceivable manner. And I think he's just failed on all fronts when it comes to that. I mean, there's been the odd Mourinho game where, like, the City at home or stuff like that, or even Liverpool away, when we've played to a style and a game plan, and we've, you know, limited possession and, you know, hit on the break and all that sort of stuff, and just defended back to the walls, and it's worked. But in games like this, like, that's what should have been the case as well. Like, I don't want us to go and stink every game out, and I don't want every game to be unenjoyable, because I'd be lying if I didn't say sort of I was glued to this game in a way that I probably aren't to every one of our games anymore. But it just was one of them where I was, you kind of sat there and like, what are we really doing? Because this is no different to a Pochettino game or a Martin Yule game even. It was just, it's almost as if the Tottenham DNA is too strong for any manager to try and overcome. So it was a bit strange. And my other conclusion was that half the squad needs selling.
That to me is more the point, because I find it, right, it's twofold, right? Number one, on the basis of what we had in front of us, I found it quite hard to blame Mourinho in a certain sense, in so much as, again, it was largely individual errors that was our unmaking, if you like. You know, I mean, Højbjerg was pretty disgusting for, I think it was like Everton's first or second. And then again, just silly penalties, people not watching their runners. And yeah, I mean, I think there is this idea that these players exist in stasis, that, you know, that Mourinho can't get better from them. But it's still the same type of individual errors we were seeing under Pochettino that would kind of be our undoing. But in a way,
maybe it's like insanity then to be having the same players trying to make them play to a certain level, and then when they fail, being surprised by it. And we've said this before about Spurs. We're very weird with how we manage our assets. We're sentimental, but then we're kind of, Levy always wants to get his £2 on the 50p when he sells them as well. Like, if he's not getting a premium, he'll just cling on to someone. And it's probably because financially that's what we need to operate as a club, and he needs that money to then reinvest in the squad or whatever. But it does long-term harm us, and we are now feeling the pinch of those years where we relied on miracles and didn't change the squad. But these aren't players who have always been bad. They're just like, you know, Harry Winks at one point in his career did boss a Real Madrid midfielder, and last night came on and looked like, was it last night? Whatever it fuck it was, the other day. Came on and looked like a competition winner.
He didn't even look. He looked like a competition runner-up, mate. Like, he was,
you know, his touch was like a trampoline. He just, he didn't find the pace of the game. He didn't settle. He might just be one of those players who's a shit sub because he's not mentally prepared, or he's not engaged, or he's not ready to, you know, jump into a game. Because he was similarly shite in that West Ham collapse.
Yeah, and I think the problem for me with Winks as well is that I think there's a certain, I mean, again, this is the uninformed layman's opinion from what I see, and just the way I've seen him sort of in interviews and stuff around his role in and around the squad, I just get the vibe there's a certain level of entitlement to Winks. I feel that he seems slightly affronted that he's considered a squad player as opposed to a first-team starter. And I do wonder how much, as you say, buying into what you're saying there about the fact that he doesn't look particularly engaged, he doesn't really look switched on, how much that plays into it. And I mean, I'm sort of at the point, I don't have a visceral reaction to it as such. want to stand by the lad as much. He is a Tottenham fan. He's a proper Tottenham boy. He's one of our own and all that, you know. And I think it's well and good to say it when it's Harry Kane and he's one of the best players in the world that we'd stand by him through thick and thin. There is a part of me that thinks, yeah, maybe we should stand by Winks through that. But the selfish, you know, part of me that just wants to see Tottenham do well is like, look, 20 mil, Crystal Palace, go on, have him. He can be your best player for
that's the thing.
The
like
next 10 years, you know?
I think he'd look decent. He'd probably get in the England squad if he played for West Ham, Villa, Southampton, Palace, that sort of a team, Brighton, Newcastle even, Fulham.
He would be. The league, I dare say.
He'd walk into most of the teams underneath within the league.
Yeah, he'd go there and he'd look quality and everyone would say, oh, look at the player Spurs flogged, but we'd know the truth. Do you know what I mean? It's one of those kind of things for me.
And again, it could go the other way because we were... I don't know why we were less sort of invested in these players given they were, you know, probably more important to us at the time. But Bentaleb left having been brilliant and has amounted to nothing. But he's clearly got some attitude problems, serious attitude problems. Ryan Mason left and went to Hull and was okay, but... And, you know, it's unfortunate how his career came to an end prematurely, but it's not as if we were missing him in a footballing sense when he left. So it's we have done these deals when sort of we might not have otherwise, and we've got decent enough money for him. But I think that's probably more the players wanting to go. I think Winks probably wants to try and stay and fight for a place. And as admirable as that is, we just kind of... We might need to go, no, we're going to sack you off and then spend that money on a, you know, what's it called, Basuma from Brighton or something like that. Like, if we reinvest the money like that, it'd be brilliant. And the other concern, though, Jack, is our squad is already quite... we've got a lot of international players and there's rotas to hit, especially post-Brexit. And, you know, that's the reason why we got, like, Joe Hart and stuff in is because we didn't have enough English players. And we kind of need to start doing that. And this next crop of, you know, academy talent doesn't seem to be up to scratch. You know, we've got, you know, when we had like three or four pouring through at once, it doesn't feel like that at the minute. There might be another couple of years off. I think there's only...
Oliver Skip's supposed to be a player.
I was about to say Skip's had a decent year at Norwich, but other than that...
And it's always hard to know, isn't it? I mean, Alex Pritchard looked decent every time he... I mean, Alex Pritchard... tore the championship to pieces at Brentford.
Yeah, and then Huddersfield bought him for 12 million and he's been an abomination ever since.
Yeah, I mean, so it's always hard to know. I mean, he's often billed as like this grand Machiavellian genius. There was a little part of me because it has been said that, you know, you kind of imagine that people that actually work in football are somehow detached from the narratives. Oh, they don't read the papers. They don't listen to Talk Sport. They don't look at Twitter or the internet in general. But it's been said that Jose Mourinho very much is the type of person who is in all of it. He wants to know everything that's been said about him, his teams, and everything like that. And I couldn't help but get the feeling that the narrative, quite aggressively so, the past few weeks, and you know, with good reason, has been Spurs are boring and Spurs can only play with Harry Kane. And this Everton game was notable for me noteworthy for me in the sense that it was almost like Mourinho saying, all right, let's play expansively and let's play without Harry Kane. And there you go. We ship three goals and I have to bring Kane on to save the day. Like, you know, it just seems again like we're going to have a reaction off of the back of this as we did from the 3-3 with West Ham. Yeah, I mean, when we were in a moment, when we were playing a bit more expansively, a bit more adventurously, he was trusting his defence to be able to cope with the added pressure more that style of football brought to him. And again, they let him down. And it's... This is the kind of... this is something I wanted to sort of touch on, really, with Mourinho in that, like, I think he... I was speaking to Scott about this, the United fan, the other day that I was chatting to, that the problem with Mourinho that I still find is, as much as it irritates me at times and as much as I do have this reaction to some of our games where I think, oh, why are you playing like that? Why are you doing that? You're so irritated. Oh, I just... Maybe he is done. Maybe I do want him gone. But then when I try and kind of... When I take that step back away from, like, my emotional brain, which I can do every now and again, and sort of piece together the argument that I would coherently form, he still seems to occupy those grey spaces for me, Mourinho, where you're like, I can't in good faith attribute this all to him. And whether or not he's doing this by design, whether he is this agent of chaos, or whether that is just the fact of it, that there are these narratives that are projected onto Mourinho because he's a bit of a twat, because he's a bit outspoken, that people then want to have this confirmation bias of Mourinho's this bad guy, he's a baddie, he's one of football's dark elements, he should be rooted out. And thus we see things that transpire on the football pitch, and that's just all part of this. It's all part of this dark umbrella, this net that Mourinho has, this effect. When really it's like, well, if we remove that emotional side from this, which shouldn't be done entirely because I think it does play a part, and I'm not going to deny that it does, but at the same time, if we're to sort of Occam's razor this, Tottenham's squad is not fit for purpose. And what he is trying to do is get us as close to the Champions League places as possible. And if that requires us to just be really, really, really conservative and rely on the strengths of our squad, which are, let's be honest, Kane and Son, and now Ndombele, who he is starting to incorporate a lot more. But in the first instance, Kane and Son scoring goals, surely then the rest of the game is going to be our defence is crap, so let's just play an ultra conservative style. Maybe it's less about Mourinho parking the bus and more about Mourinho literally trying to do whatever he can to mitigate for the fact of, like you say, we have a squad that's been neglected for a very long time and really isn't fit for purpose as a Champions League qualifying team, which is what clearly the aspirations of the board and the fan base is now.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I think the second half of that is spot on because, but I don't think it was, I don't think he was trying to make a point with the team he sent out or how we played, because if it wasn't for Robin Olsen suddenly becoming Lev Yashin for half an hour, we would have been 2-3 up. And
that
the game
save
would have
from
done.
Son was mad.
Ridiculous. And the guy's shitty was like throwing him in against Man United, so fuck knows how he's turned up. It's just something that happens against Spurs, apparently. But yeah, we played well enough, and I don't think he can account for or predict or stop or have any effect over that collective complete loss of any semblance of sense or backbone that happened to ship three goals as quickly as we did. Like, that was... That's on the players. There's nothing that he can do as a manager. He literally cannot hold their hand any more than he does. You concede a goal, you concede two. Like, we mentioned this on a past show, that they're so quick to give up on themselves and to sort of fall into a funk that it can't be him. And he's alluded to it now. He said in the press sort of, or they're losing confidence, or they're a sad squad, or whatever it is he said. And he's essentially saying, look, these lads don't really believe in themselves the way they should, and that's born to see on the field. And yeah, I actually think, you know, having listened to you say it, there is a definite element to him trying to get blood from a stone in some senses, because I think it's unfair for us to sort of go, oh, this is a squad that... Pochettino was having us play amazing football with and got to a Champions League final. That was, what, 2-3 years ago? And around that time, for the best part of 18 months under Pochettino,
we were comparatively shit in the league and comparatively shit in other games. We just had a miracle and Ajax and put a run together in one other cup with like VAR assists and, you know, Llorente playing a few decent games. And it's sort of like, I think there is an awful lot of predetermined sort of ideas and feelings about Mourinho, and people wanted him to fail before he'd even taken charge of a game because of who he is and what he had before, and that's understandable, and that's fair enough. Football's one of those rare things in life we're allowed to be somewhat irrational about, because it's a folly at the end of the day. But I think we're being somewhat unfair on the bloke, and there is elements of him, he will just naturally fall back into his own comfort space, which is being defensive, being somewhat surly in the press and stuff. But I don't think he's been anywhere and comparatively as negative or embarrassing to be in charge of the club as he was at Man United or anything like that. I don't think he's actively like trying to break players or fuck the board off or anything like that. Like if he was at Man United, like Dele Alli would not be getting a sniff. Like he would have just put him in the reserves and everything else. But the fact that he seems to still be bending the knee somewhat to Daniel Levy and has gone, right, you refuse to sell him, I'll have this, broker these peace talks that will leak to the press, take Ledley with me, and then play him as soon as he's fit again. Like, he's clearly been a company man to some point, and he's not always done that. So I don't think he's completely fair to write him off, but I don't think there's any long-term I don't think there's a long-term upside to having him in charge, because we know that this with Mourinho only ends one way. No matter what happens, it ends one way. And how we get there and what happens on the path to where the way it ends is all well and good. We can pick up a cup. We might be able to nick a Europa League or whatever. And fucking hell, if I wouldn't be happy with that. But we kind of... And I think we, by the Dele Alli decision and stuff similarly, I think we've already shown as a club that we are looking beyond Mourinho. And the decision now has to be made, really, is he the manager that oversees the painful rebuild, or do we bring in a project man to do it? Because there is Harry Winks and Moussa Sissoko and Eric Dier and Aurier or Doherty, by the way, whose finest performance for Spurs with his announcement video. all these players that are questionable, Vinicius even, do we sign him permanently? Like, what would the point be of that if Harry Kane's not playing and we don't even bring him on? All these questions to ask about these players. Like, do we sell them? Do we move on? Do we, you know, entirely gut the squad? Because in my opinion, we need an entirely new back... majority of a back four. The only one who I'd say, like, yeah, he can definitely start every week is Reguilon.
And he's apparently going back this summer as well.
Yeah,
and
they've got a clause to buy him back if Zidane fancies now, and probably not even his choice. It'll be Perez wanting him. But it's one of those where we definitely need one left back, if not two. We definitely need one right back, if not two. We could potentially need 3 to 4 central defenders, because Toby Alderweireld has fallen off a cliff somehow. He has the odd occasional great game, but he's been overplayed to such a point where
he's just old, and he's got players around him that, you know, it's hard for the guy. I think especially at his age, he needs a solid kind of young centre back partner. You know,
I think if we were... His age is one thing, but you need to view it through the prism of the fact that he was a week-in, week-out Pochettino defender for all those years with no backup. Yeah. So that was playing football at a rate that most centre-backs don't play it. So when you're a John Terry or that type who just sits there and, you know, blocks things coming at you for 20 years, then you can play till your mid-30s. But this bloke's done a bit more than that. And there's a bit more to his game, and we're asking too much of him for somebody whose legs are just going a little bit. And
I mean, let's not also forget that in his last year, Pochettino wasn't really using Alderweireld much either. So whether he saw something there or whatever, you know, we can only speculate on that. I mean, one thing I did want
to sell him to Ajax for 20 million.
Yeah, I mean, one thing I did want to pick up on, and this is more one of my unfounded theories, but it's not even something I stand by per se. It's just a point to consider, because the way I often see this build, and this is on the kind of Mourinho Pochettino side of things, is that we have Mourinho now, and then the alternative is going to be we're going to bring in another project manager that's going to bring the good times back, that we're all going to be happy, that we're going to have a Klopp light, you know, whether, I don't think it'll be Hasenhüttl now since he's masterminded 2-9-0 defeats in successive seasons. but, you know, whether it's, you know, a Nagelsmann or whoever.
Rodgers.
There seems to be this idea that we're going to have, like I say, a project manager, bring the good times back. It'll be like Pochettino again. And I do think... like
this, disrespectful to Pochettino.
Well, yeah, there's several parts to this in the respect that in my lifetime, the only person that's ever come close to Pochettino is Martin Jol.
Tim Sherwood.
I just loved him, mate. It was such a good time.
Gile.
But Martin Jol, I mean, those were good times. And I think, relatively speaking, as to what the club were and the club's ambitions at the time, he was probably as successful in a similar way to Pochettino in terms of it being a breakthrough and it taking Tottenham up a level, taking us to a place that we'd not really experienced before. In my lifetime, this is. I'm sure there's people who were alive in the 80s thinking, what the fuck's this bloke on about? Or can at least remember the 80s. I was alive in the 80s. But I detract from the point in so much as, look, I think now, I just personally think we need to consider the idea that, okay, we can get rid of Mourinho, but maybe you're on a hiding to nothing, lads, if you think that we're going to sack Mourinho and bring in another Pochettino, as in a diamond in the rough who has maybe done some, you know, admirable work with a lesser club, shall we say, who could be promising, who would need 4 or 5 years to build us up to a place to get a core group of galvanised players together who all live and breathe and run through brick walls for him. But we're a club that now sits in a £1 billion stadium that has been hit by coronavirus, that needs, not wants, doesn't want it as a fanciful, prideful thing, needs Champions League football. It needs it. This sense that we can just write off a few years or take a gamble on, for example, let's say Graham Potter. Right, somebody like that who, yeah, okay, great. You could make some parallels with what Potter's doing at Brighton and what Pochettino did at Southampton. Cool. But Tottenham are not the same club now as they were then.
Yeah, bang on.
We need to face the reality that Tottenham are now the club that, right, Mourinho goes, who's available? Allegri. Bring him in. Let's see if he can crack it. Right, fuck, that's not worked out. Allegri's not available. Right, Real Madrid have just sacked Zidane. Let's bring him in. Let's see what happens. That might be the club that we are now.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And
yeah, our next roll of the dice is the sentimental one. It's, oh, Ryan Mason's doing really well in the club, we'll put him in charge, or Ledley and Ryan are going to take charge, and that sort of a thing. But you're completely right, because as nice as the idea might be to give Graham Potter 5 years to build a project, Harry Kane's not throwing 5 years of his career away in his prime to potentially become a league winner in 5 years' time. Heung-min Son's not extending his contract for that. Like we said this before, the only sellable and sort of acceptable in both a PR and a squad management sense appointment post Pochettino was Mourinho, because you needed his stature and track record to sell that as a sense of progression and a step up for the club. And in many ways, without being disrespectful to what Pochettino did, it was, because he came from Southampton. Mourinho comes from a laundry list of the biggest clubs in Europe and having won at each and every single one of them. So we have to continue that trend now. That is, you're completely right in saying that's what we've become. We are another one of those clubs that will just swap managers every few years. If there's somebody bright and up and coming that has a few good years at Dortmund, they'll be linked. So, if we'd have sacked off Mourinho before and Tuchel was available, we'd have gone for him and all that sort of shit. We're just another one of those clubs going for a very small and limited pot of managers that end up being at several high-profile clubs. Like, it wouldn't shock me at some point if Conte crops up at Tottenham or something like that. It's all the same sort of ideas and all the same sort of people and things, because that's the only way that we can sort of keep players happy and sort of sell it to fans as well, as like, oh, we've got in a winner, we've got in somebody with this track record, we're going to go for this. And unless there's like an AVB type who at a smaller club has one of those seasons where he fucking pisses at absolutely everything, then there's not going to be a sort of a clamour for that sort of profile of manager again, I don't think. Like, the one at the minute who is the outstanding candidate in terms of that is Nagelsmann.
Yeah.
And whether or not we actually get him or not is there to be seen. I think he's still in his 30s as well, so it's sort of... That's a weird appointment, because the guy has been doing it a long time, but he's really fucking young now, and sort of, do you want the 33-year-old or whatever, or do you want the guy who's 60 and won shitloads? Like, who's the one that sort of... you bank on? And I kind of feel as if we're, until Pochettino maybe comes back at some point, this is us now. This is the club we've become, and sort of we spent years yearning for Spurs to be sat at the top table, and now we are. We're kind of going to have to make our peace with that, because we don't get to have love affairs like the Pochettino one anymore, because that's not what clubs of this size and this ambition tend to do. It's a very rare thing. And to assume that any young manager with, a few bright ideas is going to capture hearts and minds in the same way Pochettino did, either misunderstands what Pochettino achieved and sort of is disrespectful to his time at the club, or just, wasn't really as enamoured with him as everyone else was. So I agree with your point. It's sort of it's making sense and making your peace with what Tottenham in 2021 are compared to where we were 5-6 years ago, because it's completely different.
I think that's
every sense.
Yeah, I think that's a really good point you raise as well on the on the emotional level. Just that if you think Pochettino can be kind of replaced in that sense as easily as just, we can bring in a young guy that isn't Mourinho, then you kind of miss the point as to quite how special Pochettino was, at least in my opinion anyway, the greatest manager we've had in my lifetime by a long way,
Greatest, comfortably.
Greatest manager and one of the best, probably, men we've had, it was a joy to have him associated with the football club. And you don't just get to have that because Mourinho's really bad. The alternative isn't always that. And can I just say, I just want to caveat this by saying this isn't just some advocacy of like we should therefore keep Mourinho. I get there are very succinct arguments as to why we are already nearly approaching Mourinho endgame, although I do feel like those are, again, on a hiding to nothing. £15 million a year contract until 2023. There isn't a chance to me that a few poor results in league fixtures, when we're still within touching distance of the Champions League, are going to see him sacked. I've seen some people say if we lose to City and then maybe lose to West Ham and then we go out of the Europa League, is not a chance. Not a chance. If we finish the season mid-table, don't win any cups, then there may be some sort of clause that comes into play that will see him be able to break and we can give him a lower compensation fee. But we're not paying him £45 million at this point to sack him.
Well, I think the way that Spurs work it is, this is what we did with Poch, is we just stick him on gardening leave. So Pochettino wasn't allowed to join any other English clubs after we'd got rid of him, because until his contract ended, because we were just paying his contract as it was. So we never paid him a lump sum and told him to fuck off. We just carried on paying him in the background and just let him exist. And then there was that point where his contract had ended at Spurs and we'd stopped paying him. And so that was any payoff he was going to get.
I wish my job would do that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Brilliant. I've not even, you know, it doesn't matter. I was going to say, the other thing with having Mourinho in charge is if we do need somebody to not bend Levy's will, but kind of, you know, impose his own will on him in terms of, look, these players I want to get rid of and I want these other people to come in. Mourinho's best place to do that, because he's got the stature and he's got the sort of bollocks to just go in and go, look, he's shit, fucking, you're not going to get 30 million for him, sell him for what you can and give me the money to reinvest in this squad, and we're going to need to spend, you know, a net of 100 to 200 million this window to get a functional defence and get a team worthy of actually taking the field and being worthy of being in a conversation for cups again, because that might be fair. Because if we think about how many transfer windows we took off, it's not an exact science, but it's probably fair to say we need that amount of very active transfer windows to rectify those wrongs. And there must have been three or four, because there was two full years where we didn't sign fucking anyone, and there's two windows a year where we actually need to do something. And we did nothing this January. We had a fairly decent summer on paper in terms of bringing people in, but you know, a couple of those are already, you know, raising your eyebrows at.
On this one, quick question for you, right? If we're looking at a coronavirus affected ring fence transfer budget for Tottenham, which will mean that we basically we're fishing in the 12 to 15 million pound hit and hope, you know, one side is Doughty, the other side is Højbjerg barrel, but there's the potential for us to spend bigger were we to lose one of the key assets. Learning from the Christian Eriksen thing, and considering he has, what, a year left on his contract after this year if he doesn't sign, do you consider offers for Son this summer?
Only if he wants to leave. Otherwise, you sign him up. And I think I was under the impression with all the activity around him in terms of the fucking Korean feed and all that sort of stuff, buying in the Korean females captain and all that thing and doubling down on that market, that we were fairly close to getting that contract signed. And the lad seems happy enough. Whether or not his dad's happy with him not winning anything is another question. And that documentary on Amazon...
Do you consider offers for Kane? I won't just single Son out.
No.
This is probably one for another day, but I think Kane's gone, mate.
Really?
I'm worried. I'm getting worried about
I'm not,
one.
Because he's still not broken the all-time transfer scoring record, and I think he really wants that.
I think if City don't get Haaland... because I think there's going to be a bum fight for Haaland this summer. That's my thing. And if City don't get Haaland, I think they'll absolutely come in.
I think he's aged out of it now and he's had one too many injuries, kid.
I don't know. This is another one of those things I look at. I think Kane's injuries are far more pronounced because he's at a team like Tottenham. There isn't this constant speculation about Kevin De Bruyne's career when he's probably got more significant injuries and is often affected by injuries a lot more than Kane.
Oh, he's not English either.
But they can just manage his time. I think Kane, he's still post... I've done this one to death, but for me...
Yeah, but Harry Kane's not going to go to City and want to sit on the bench every other day.
Mate, if it means he wins a... I think he'd do that to win a Premier League
title. The guy's
title.
Face when he's playing fucking Farmers in the Europa League, like he's fuming. He's not going to want to sit on the bench. Like, oh, if Pep turns around and goes, oh, it's only Southampton this week, you take a week off, it's going to be like, no, because fucking Salah's ahead of me in the scoring charts. I'm this many behind Alan Shearer. I want to fucking fill my boots.
I know what you're saying, but I know we can only speculate. This is just our opinions. But still, I think it is getting to the point of his career now when he's like, do I want the all-time record or do I want to win a Premier League? And I think the more and more he looks at Brady, for example, winning another Super Bowl, he's going to be thinking, fuck me, man. Like, this ain't happening. Like, it's...
I think he's more likely to stay until he's, like, in his early 30s and then retire early and go and try and be an NFL kicker or some shit like that. I don't think we're in any danger of losing him anytime soon. That might be me being overly sort of confident about that, but I think if he wanted to leave, I think it's a lot harder than he's going to assume it is.
Yeah, I agree with that. I mean, let's just, because we are going to have to wrap up very soon. Quick one. Manchester City. Now, I mean, for me...
Oh, we're going to have our pants pulled down. Yeah, talking about.
I know, like, I mean, I'm not... The thing is, you know me, I wear my heart on my sleeve. I'm not afraid to predict a kind of win against the odds and... I thought we'd beat them earlier.
One second, Jack.
I've
just got you carry on talking. I've just got a knock at the door.
I thought we'd beat them earlier on in the season, and we did. But to me, this has the look of a game that basically is for every time there's a Champions League fixture where we can turn up and look like a plucky underdog. And it will take some grit. It will take some determination for us to get it over the line. You can have that feeling that we're going to get it done. And Manchester City equally seem to have us in their own heads that we're not, you know, that they're not going to be able to overcome us because Tottenham are a bit of a bogey team. I mean, this is really weird. I'm just talking to nobody right now. You can actually hear Raj in the background.
Hello.
Talking to someone at the door. And,
yeah, there was a man here to fit my wardrobes. So we need to wrap the podcast up.
Cool. Well, basically, I was just going to say that there are some times when it looks like Spurs might get a win against the odds, but there are times when Edin Dzeko turns up at White Hart Lane and scores four goals, and we remember, shit, this is Manchester City.
Oh, yeah, it's They're Valentine's Day on Sunday, Jack. We're going to get our... This is our time to, you know, lay down and think of England.
We'll put the fancy knickers on then, shall we?
Yep. Get the slip on.
Right then, Reg. Well, on that note, have fun getting your wardrobe fixed. And if
not
you,
a euphemism.
Yeah, on that note of Valentine's Day and pants being pulled down. And thanks for listening to Rule Rich Podcast. Like, subscribe, do all that.
By the way,
shit.
Just before I go, thank you to those people. Jack's turned on this like support function on the Acast, which we don't talk about because we're not begging on the side of the street. But thank you to those people that have done that just randomly, because that's not an expectation. I think you randomly just ticked a box one day, didn't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I just sort of thought, you know, we have both, on a real one, we have both sort of spent money on recording equipment to make the pod better. And it, yeah, it didn't come for free, but we're not going to stick it. And this isn't side eye or anything. I'm just saying we're not going to stick it behind a paywall. We still sort of agree with the fact that everybody should be able to listen to the pod, but if anyone...
more the fact that I don't think we're professional or doing enough to do that. If we record like 3-4 a week and all that sort of shit, then that's fine. But the fact that like last night we were supposed to do one and I kind of went, I fucked my jacket potato up, I can't be bothered doing it. You were like, yeah, that's sound. We can't really expect people to be paid for that level of professionalism.
If the appetite's there, maybe we could. But at the same time, you know, we do have the support feature. So if you do want to chuck a bit, please do, but don't feel obliged to, just so you know it's there. Anyway, I feel so uncomfortable doing that stuff. It's but we haven't done the Manscaped or Harry's Razors thing yet. So,
and we have been offered, by the way.
We have been. They just didn't.
And we always say no.
They didn't want to give us enough. They didn't want to buy our egos for enough for us to do that. But anyway, carry on listening to the pod. Listen to the old episodes. Watch Spurs wipe, please. I beg you. Come on, you Spurs.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.